bin Charlotte und ihr hört Breakup, den Podcast übers Schlussmachen.
Und bevor es mit der Folge losgeht, habe ich noch ein paar Hinweise für euch. Zum einen ist diese Episode auf Englisch. Ich finde, es ist ein sehr einfaches Englisch, das man gut versteht, aber so grundlegende Sprachkenntnisse braucht man schon. Zum zweiten handelt es sich um die Fortsetzung der Episode 2 Amerikaner in Zürich. Die wurde im letzten November hier im Podcast veröffentlicht. Und wenn du jetzt die Geschichte vom November noch nicht kennst, würde ich vorschlagen, dass du zuerst die anhörst. Weil Ben, der in der Folge, die jetzt kommt, mein Gast ist und ich, wir nehmen immer wieder Bezug auf die Geschichte von November. Vieles macht also erst Sinn, wenn du auch diese erste Episode kennst. Und wenn ihr noch mehr über die Hintergründe zu dieser Aufnahme wissen wollt, dann empfehle ich euch einen Artikel in der Berliner Zeitung. Den habe ich so vor ungefähr 2 Wochen geschrieben und da erzähle ich von meinen Erfahrungen mit diesem Podcast, aber auch von der Aufnahme, die ihr jetzt gleich hört. Der Link dazu ist in den Shownotes. Und jetzt wünsche ich euch viel Spaß mit der Geschichte von Ben.
Du, ich glaube, das mit uns, das funktioniert nicht mehr so richtig.
Ich weiß, dass ich wahrscheinlich nie wieder jemanden finden werde, der so toll ist wie du. Aber ich finde, irgendwie ist es vorbei.
Hallo, ich bin Charlotte und ihr hört Breakup, den Podcast übers Schlussmachen. Ich bin hier in meinem Gästezimmer in Zürich und habe einen Gast heute. Hallo Ben, schön, dass du da bist.
Hallo.
Ich werde jetzt gleich die Sprache wechseln und mit Ben auf Englisch sprechen. Es tut mir schon jetzt leid, dass mein Englisch echt nur so mittelmäßig ist. Ich merke auch schon gerade, dass ich ein bisschen nervös werde. Aber ich glaube, Ben, mein Englisch ist noch besser als dein Deutsch, hast du gesagt, oder?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so let's switch. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me here.
Yeah. One part of your story has been told on this podcast, kind of. Mm-hmm. Because my friend Casey mm-hmm. told his story, the story of your marriage, mm-hmm. a few months ago. And I think in February or something like that, you contacted me. Because mm-hmm. then you were aware of his telling the story. Because before you hadn't noticed and then you, I don't know, you stumbled across it or?
Yes, correct. Actually, it was my co-worker's ex-girlfriend
okay.
who this follows your podcast and then it followed the chain from there.
Okay, hi.
Oh, okay.
That's nice. Yeah, and she was like, okay, that seems like Ben's husband who's telling this story.
Right, even yeah. though I met her once for 5 minutes a year ago. I feel terrible for saying this. I don't even remember meeting her.
Okay.
It was at a party, but
yeah, of course.
Apparently after 5-10 minutes, that was actually enough, you know, for her to recognize.
Okay.
Just from the
okay.
general life details.
Okay, yeah. And then you've been listening to it and then you've been contacting me. And then we had a few calls and a few messages we wrote and then we agreed on doing a second take where you just tell your story.
Yes.
And for anyone who's wondering right now, I also talked to Casey about it and he was like, yeah, of course, why shouldn't he have the same opportunities that I had? Yeah. So, the story as I know it is the story of 2 men who are in love. Do not worry, it's just water.
mm-hmm.
And who moved to Vietnam,
mm-hmm.
the country where your family is from? Or
that's correct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you've been there for a few years, or for how long have you been there?
Yes, we moved together to Vietnam. And I stayed there for about 1.5 years. After that, I went to Stockholm,
mm-hmm.
Sweden, for my master's. And Casey stayed behind because he had the job
yeah.
In Vietnam still.
And he really liked it, didn't he?
Vietnam?
Yeah.
Vietnam in general, yes. I think in general, he really loves the country. I think he loved the experience. But to be perfectly honest, I don't remember all the details from the interview that Casey gave.
Yeah, of course.
But I think he was a little hurt that I went to Sweden without, you know, and basically left him in Vietnam.
Yeah, that's understandable. Yeah.
Because, and I did not realize this until many years later.
Okay.
Or some years later, because, I mean, that's the thing, right? Sometimes the things that hurt other people are not things that we purposefully do. It's usually things that we just do and we don't even think.
Of course, yeah.
And you know, because for him, I think he felt like I was the one who took him to Vietnam.
Yeah.
And I just left him there.
Yeah, of course.
And for me, Vietnam was, for both of us, Vietnam was never a permanent place. I just wanted to have this experience. I wanted to share the culture and everything with him. He learned the language really well. He pronounces it almost as a native, which is almost impossible for a foreigner.
Wow. Yeah.
Although I take credit for teaching the pronunciation.
Yeah.
But anyway, it was always my dream, you know, to continue my studies and eventually we would be in Europe.
Why Europe?
I don't know. I think my personality is I maybe will always find idealize something is better on the other side. So growing up in America, living in America my whole life, I wanted to, my dream was to be in Europe one day, get a second passport, and I really loved Sweden, and you know, and I already spoke some Swedish.
Okay. Yeah.
So, and that was basically our plan, that we would eventually end up in Europe. I think for him the timing was still fast. There was only 1.5 years, and also this right when I was about to go to Sweden, that's when my mom got diagnosed with cancer.
Yeah.
Which, and at that point, it was stage 4 cancer. And we didn't think, people were estimating she would only have months. So it was this huge disrupt. Obviously, all these things became not important, right? Mm-hmm. So the original plan was I moved from Vietnam to Sweden. And then suddenly, in the summer, I had to fly back to America.
Because my mom was living in America.
Yes, sorry. Well, no one expected this, but she made a miraculous recovery. Again, they said a few months. She ended up living about 6 years.
Wow, that's great.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I actually offered to cancel or delay my master's studies. You know, I'm an only child. She is divorced. I don't have a relationship to my father. And she said, no, she did not want to be. She wanted me to live my life and take this opportunity, because I had a scholarship to study and it was a dream university for me and in a dream country. And I was really passionate about the topic. In a way, she kind of made a sacrifice and she, for, you know, for me, and said, no, you should go to Sweden.
Yeah.
And then from America, I went to Sweden.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. But that's a lot on your shoulders at that time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And I also have to say, Casey was quite supportive during this time too. During that summer, he did fly to America to see me and my mom as well. But it was very chaotic, you know.
It sounds super hard, and it sounds super hard to make any sort of decision when you're in that state of mind.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And during that 2 years of my PhD, we were flying in this triangle pattern between America, Sweden and Vietnam.
Wow.
You know?
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
And how did your studies go? Could you still study?
Yes, actually my studies went quite well. Yes, and my time in Sweden was beautiful. It was really what I wanted it to be, what I expected. I became much better in my Swedish. And
mm-hmm.
I really fell in love with the country. I even, you know, had a job offer kind of lined up to stay there.
Oh, well, cool.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And then Casey got a job offer himself in Switzerland. Oh, how did
that
go? Yeah,
so the first year in Sweden, things went normal and fine. And my mom made such a strong recovery. She went back to work.
Oh, wow.
And everything. So there was
this
feeling
amazing.
That everything is normal.
Yeah.
You know, and then, Casey and I, we flew back and forth every few months. But at the time, because I was in Sweden, I loved my time there. I had great friends. Maybe I didn't really notice how much Casey was suffering.
Yeah.
You know, like, we talk on the phone every day, and maybe he doesn't talk very much, or he's a little melancholic. But I realized later it's because he was really sad to be in Vietnam. He didn't kind of realize at that point. I think he was wondering, why am I here?
Yeah, of course.
In Vietnam. And I think to me, I was a little blind to that because it was
Sweden. It happens.
Yeah.
It also happened to me that I was in your position, that I was just doing fine. And I was realizing the other person's maybe not as good as I am right now, but that you really notice that there's a bigger problem.
Mm-hmm.
You sometimes just don't. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But there, I mean, you know, in the middle of my master's, he lived with me in Sweden for the summer. It was beautiful. We, you know, we went on this beautiful bike tour of Åland, the Finnish island. It was a really idyllic time.
Yeah.
But in the second year, well, basically what happened was and really there is absolutely no excuse for this. I cheated on him.
Yeah.
And afterwards I immediately told him, I don't like I'm this person that, yeah, I could do bad things, but then I have to confess immediately.
Yeah.
And he took it very poorly, naturally. And he said, I have to fly. And I had to fly back to Vietnam immediately to make amends or something. And that was, I think I was in Vietnam for 2 weeks.
Wow.
I took time off from my classes, and it was the first few days where, you know, I mean, he put me through the ringer. He really was very, very tough on me, and I kind of accepted it, you know, like, I did something wrong, I deserve punishment. I think Casey may have mentioned this, but there is this relationship dynamic where I am more submissive.
Mm-hmm.
So I let him determine the way the conversation goes. I give him a little more power indirectly in some ways. And in this moment, I felt terrible. I felt like a piece of crap. So, and then at some point, it was 3-4 days of feeling horrible. And then he admitted offhand that, oh yeah, I did stuff too.
Okay.
But then he said, oh, well, it doesn't count as cheating. And I didn't tell you the 4 days when I put you through hell because the specifics of the sexual activity were not as far as what you did, so it doesn't count as cheating. And then I was angry, but then suddenly I felt okay again.
Okay.
Because then, like, I have this right to have an ego to defend myself.
Of course,
You know. And I know other people in my situation would be very angry. He says, you cannot, yes, what I did was wrong, but you cannot apply a double standard. And this double standard is based on your definition, admit to it too, and then we decide. And yes, in retrospect, I feel like he kind of put me through court with uneven laws that he was using on himself and on me. Anyway, we made a reconciliation.
Mm-hmm.
And we also discussed what happened. And I tried my best to be honest. And I said, well, this is nothing against you, Casey, but I just want an open, you know, an open relationship.
That was what you said after this incident?
Yes, correct.
Okay, okay, yeah.
And he said, sure. And then I flew back and he blocked me on multiple, like, social media and, you know. And then after a month, I found out he was kind of...
But you didn't speak for a couple of months then?
No, I forget it exactly, but we did not speak very much.
Okay.
Eventually, he kind of said, you know, I can't do this. Can we just please? And also by this point, we were starting, this was around the third semester of my master's. We were talking about what will happen after my master's.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, look, I think this is the wrong time to do this. Can we just be monogamous again?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, fine, of course, because it wasn't worth the stress and pain I was causing him. And then, well, what happened was we had this agreement that whoever got the better job offer, the other person would follow.
Of course.
And I knew, well, I was at a consultancy and they really liked me, went really well. And then I was really expecting a job offer. And we both, Casey and I, expected that I would probably get the better job offer, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
And his career as a teacher was new and his school was not very high ranked among
mm-hmm.
international schools. So we expected that would mean I would.
Yeah, that you would go to Sweden, the two of you.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he was expecting to maybe get job offers in, like, Dubai, India, China.
Mm-hmm. Of course, yeah.
And I got offered a second paid internship instead of a full job offer. And he got a job offer here.
Yeah.
And it was the complete inversion
of what you expected.
Of what we expected. And then I tried to be, you know, I didn't want to let go of Sweden, and I tried to maybe find a way to say, oh, you know, maybe I could stay in Sweden for a while and see what happens. And he said, no, I mean, come on, like,
We agreed on this,
and also remember what happened, and, you know, and it was basically an ultimatum, you know, what is more important for you, this job offer in Sweden or the relationship, and then you go with me to Switzerland. And I know for him it's very important to be in a German-speaking country, and I never really idealized Switzerland. I never had any major plans of traveling here.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I really loved him. And I made a choice, and I decided to give up the offer and then move to Switzerland with him with no job.
Nothing. Yeah, yeah.
You know.
And that's huge.
On the last night we were in Sweden, it was me and some of my best friends,
mm-hmm.
and Casey. We all got a little drunk, and Casey made a comment that hurt the feelings of one of my friends.
Okay.
And she started crying.
Okay. Doesn't sound like him.
I mean, but it's arguable if she was...
Okay,
anyway,
whatever.
But, you know, my other Swedish friend took her side.
Yeah.
So what was supposed to be, you know, this beautiful goodbye to this country turned to this complete, you know, nightmare scenario where, you know... Yes,
oh, no.
You know, he's burning the bridges with these really close and meaningful friends to me, and I'm going to, you know, a place I didn't really want to go to.
Yeah.
And it took me throughout the whole relationship, even until now, but that was the most angry I've ever been.
Okay.
At Casey.
Okay.
It took me a very long time to forgive him.
Okay.
And I came to Switzerland and I collapsed. Basically, I didn't slept crazy hours. I just stayed at home and cooked all day, and I became very good at cooking.
Yeah.
But my world really shrank, and it really upset Casey.
That you didn't like it here. Oh.
Not just that, but that I wasn't doing something.
Yeah.
With myself. Because I know Casey has a very high faith in my abilities. He knows I'm relatively good at learning languages. So he thinks, oh, well, he has no job. Casey is supporting me. So I have all this time to learn German and,
explore the city,
and
explore the country. Yeah.
I mean, I did. I visited all cantons that first year. But
you did?
Yes. Yes.
That's cool.
Yeah. So
that's really cool.
Yeah. But it wasn't. And again, about this submissive dynamic, I think that became much stronger.
Yeah.
Because he's the one with money. He's the one supporting me. I have nothing.
Yeah.
He has this dream job pretty much at the top of the pyramid for his career.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I was the one who really fucked up.
Yeah.
So I have to punish myself and go to Switzerland.
Yeah, does not sound like a good dynamic for you.
Right. And I think he did mention this, but he has a dynamic where if he kind of lost more respect for me, the more that I was making myself smaller and smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And the more that I was making myself more submissive, that I was turning myself into almost like a housewife, I think he lost more and more respect and almost was giving me less and less attention.
Mm-hmm.
And this was this reaction, and this caused this cycle, this feedback loop.
I feel really sorry for you for that
and
time.
And I think, and it's hard for him too, because he is not a very extroverted, generally he's not an extroverted person. He's at a job that requires a lot of social energy.
Of course, yeah.
And he has to go home every day to someone who needs a lot of social interaction.
Yeah.
Whose only source of social interaction is someone who is very exhausted of social interaction from work.
Yeah.
And so I think he would come home, he was exhausted, that I would want to talk to him about crazy stuff I read on Wikipedia at 4 a.m. or, you know, and he had to deal with students' crazy stuff and parents all day.
Yeah, of course.
And I think the saddest moments was I had discovered there, I think Casey told the story, there was this Swedish club,
mm-hmm.
of Swedish people in Basel.
Mm-hmm.
I was invited there by a friend, a classmate from Sweden who was in Basel. And I went there and it was beautiful. I spoke Swedish from the entire night, did not speak any English. I was around people, I was to interact with people, I got to tell stories and be social again. And I felt this connection that I had, this reconnection with something I had lost. And then I remembered, and I stayed the night with my friend and I took the first train in the morning back to Zurich. And I would actually be in Zurich in time for Casey to wake up before he goes to work.
Oh, that's
and
cute.
I remember being so excited to tell him about what this amazing night I had. And I came home and he didn't respond at all.
Yeah.
It was just, he was catatonic.
Yeah.
He just did not want to respond to anything. I was really crushed, you know, because I felt like this was the first time something positive had happened to me in a very long time. And he couldn't say anything, couldn't feel happy for me. He didn't have anything to say. And this type of thing happened over and over and over. And it made me feel really, really horrible. And I'm not really angry at him about that. I think it was just a dynamic that was just not sustainable. And it was kind of forcing us to function in a way that was not natural for us. So eventually my mom was pressuring me. My mom was really upset that I threw away my job, this offer in Sweden, and said, look, you need to find something. So she told me to start a master's. She advised me to do anything. So I started a second master's at ETH.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, ETH is a lot harder than the Swedish university I was at. I immediately regretted it. But finally, having something to do, going mm-hmm. to classes, having actually my best friends in Switzerland was from this one semester
mm-hmm.
that I actually hated. And I started to feel just a little better.
Yeah, slowly. And like yourself again. Somehow.
Slowly.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, but of course I wanted to quit. I said, okay, I'm not going to do another, I need a way out. And then I basically, through a connection through the ETH, I found a professor who was really needed a PhD student. And I, one thing led to another, and I was accepted and I started my PhD.
Cool. Yeah.
Quit ETH. I started my PhD exactly on my 30th birthday.
That's cool.
And it was like this perfect, and that was one of the happiest days of my life.
Because then things started to make sense again for you.
Right. And kind of revalidated this decision to move to Switzerland.
Yeah.
Because it really was this 1.5 year black hole, basically.
Yeah.
And also, you know, it's the last part of my 20s, right? And then suddenly all's well that ends well. And then, you know, I have this PhD in a topic I love very much, or I was quite interested in.
Yeah.
And then things went really well. Really, the depression just disappeared almost overnight. All the friends from my ETH became like my good friends, and I had a full social circle again. And then now we both had a salary that combined, we could do things, we could travel, we, you know, it was very comfortable.
Yeah, nice. That sounds good.
Yes.
When did that happen? Around what year?
2017.
2017, yeah. So you're also born in 1987.
But, so as I said, like, in this first year and a half in Switzerland, I kind of destroyed my ego. I felt like I had to, the only way I could show I'm sorry was to basically erase myself.
That's insane.
That sounds extreme, but it goes, even though doing that was precisely what was making the distance between me and Casey bigger. So when finally I have this PhD, which is literally a deus ex machina, like literally, you know, this ridiculous solution that fell out of the sky and my life became magically better again.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the first time in maybe 2 years, I felt like myself. I felt like I had an ego again. I felt like I had the right to say I want something.
Yeah.
You know, basically what happened was this desire of wanting to have sexual experiences with other people, which doesn't take away that I still loved Casey and wanted to be with him. It's still, these feelings came back. It's just that they were buried.
Mm-hmm.
During, you know, this time. Anyway, it was the summer after my PhD started, and he decided to do a cycling trip to Munich
mm-hmm.
from here. I can do a cycling tour around a small island. I cannot do a cycling trip to Munich. So.
It's far. It takes a week or something. Or
something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I was really impressed he finished. Although he actually took like the S-Bahn for the last part because it was raining so hard.
I can see that.
It was funny. He's like, oh, come on, Casey. You're so close. Just.
But still.
Yeah.
It's good.
Anyway,
yeah.
A few days before his trip, I did have this discussion. I decided to bring it up. And he said, fine, do what you want. And I was very shocked because I was like, we have a discussion or something. And he said, no, I have, for so long, I have oppressed you or repressed your, you know, and you need to be able to ask for what you want and take what you want.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was about to go on a cycling trip and I said, shouldn't we talk about details or whatever? And he said, no. He just didn't want to have a discussion. That was that.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, to be fully logical, I should not have just accepted this. I think he was just trying to bury the topic.
Yeah, it seems like a sign that he's not comfortable with it and that it's not, like, fine for him.
Right, but maybe on some level he also felt like he was in no position to stop me.
Yeah.
Because he did feel guilty.
You had such a bad time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, he was away for about a week, 1 or 2 weeks, and I did, you know, took advantage of the new freedom that I had asked for. And I remember he came back, things were nice, I was so happy to see him. And he even said, oh yeah, it was great, I was in Munich. Oh, I even saw a symphony with a guy that I met on, which is strange because that's a date like thing to do.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, okay, you're opening this topic then. Oh, I'm glad you got to do this. And, you know, I also met, you know, people. Then he says, wait, you had sex with people? I said, yes.
Yeah.
How many? I said, three?
Yeah.
And then his face completely changed. He took his stuff and he left the apartment without saying anything. That was that. I was completely shocked. And I think this is also this pattern of him not fully communicating. And I really should have seen before, like, okay, I'm asking for something. He says, sure, but he's not comfortable. I shouldn't have just pushed it. But at the same time, I can't read, you know, it goes both ways. I can't just constantly read between the lines of, you know, and guess what the other person is thinking. And again, there was this,
And everybody needs to speak for himself. That's just how it is. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It also felt like a double standard of sorts, you know, that...
You felt that situation that you had in Vietnam kind of reversed again, that he did something, but it doesn't count. But what you did is the absolute worst.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And he said, okay, you need your freedom. We need a small break. So he decided to move into a WG.
Yeah.
And I keep the apartment. This lasted about half a year.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened... And this was another trap, was that we just kept seeing each other more. We missed each other and we kept spending more and more time together.
Sounds kind of nice.
And then eventually he was like staying at the apartment 5-6 nights a week.
Yeah.
I just accepted it because we love each other and okay, maybe we should move back in together. Of course, the mistake was that I should have said, okay, now we have to address why this thing happened before we just say, everything feels great.
Everything's good again.
No more questions.
Yeah.
But there was one thing happened in this period that really, really left... That really angered me, again, about the submissiveness. I think with my personality, I don't get angry, for example, if he does something that's unfair.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't feel hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still something, maybe on principle, intellectually, it bothers me.
Mm-hmm.
And so during this half year, I was in America helping my mom.
Mm-hmm.
With a medical procedure. And during this time, I said, look, Casey, the apartment is more comfortable than the WG. Please, you know, you can stay there when I'm away. And I texted him when I was about to fly back. Oh, I'm flying back. I'll see you tomorrow. You know, back to Zurich. And he called me and he was very surprised.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, you're coming back. I thought you were coming back in 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
He said, no, I'm coming back tomorrow. And he said, this is kind of a... Is it okay if you stayed my WG for a night? Because
mm-hmm.
I had the key to his WG as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew why.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I said, sure. You know, and again, something that double standard, I would never... The reverse would never happen. I knew that he intended to meet someone and use the apartment. And anyway, I flew back. I went to Zvege, like, in Vitikon, in the middle of nowhere. No offense to any listeners who live in Vitikon. Like, it really should not count as Zurichstadt, really. And he never introduced me to the people in Zvege.
Yeah.
One of the people in Zvege spoke no English, no German, no language that I could remotely communicate in. I think he was from some Balkan country.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the WG, opened the door, and he's there.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's him, but he has no idea who I am.
Yeah.
And I'm just making gestures like, I am friend Kate. Yeah. So I didn't really feel comfortable being there because I don't know what he thinks. Maybe he thinks I'm whatever, a terrorist or whatever. Anyway, suddenly Casey texts me, you can come back. And again, on principle, you could say, you know, you can't just push and pull someone like that, but I did not want to be in this apartment. I did not want to be in Vitikon.
I just
came back.
Yeah.
And I came back, I opened the door, and Casey is crying on the couch. And he's watching this YouTube clip on the TV screen of one of his favorite arias from a Russian opera, Eugene Onegin. And he was replaying this clip where someone's heart gets broken, and he's crying to it. So apparently he had this weird thing with this bi-curious guy, and he was starting to get feelings for him. And this guy basically turned him down that night. So that's why he said, I could come back. And he was a crying wreck. And he was, like, literally heartbroken.
Oh, no.
Never mind that this technically, you know, well, open, in my mind, open relationship does not mean, like, emotional connections. But anyway, I...
People are different.
Yeah, and I comforted him.
Yeah.
On the sofa, and he cried in my arms, and that was sad. And again, I didn't really feel hurt or insulted, but I think on a maybe intellectual level, there was something that said, this is not fair.
Yeah.
But anyway.
It's not that you felt like what he did was not fair, but that you've been made to feel so bad for what you did.
Right. And if I had a different personality, I could, hypothetically, I could really just attack him with the same aggressiveness that he did towards me about what happened in the summer. Anyway, but we spent more time together. We were thinking, oh, let's, you know, we love each other. Let's move in back together.
Let's get married.
Well, we were, oh, sorry. We were already married by this,
okay,
this part. We were, we flew to America to get married when we were living in Vietnam.
Okay, yeah.
It's funny. We were excited about him moving back. And then he was flying to America before I was for Christmas break. And we were thinking, okay, we're moving back. When is your vague contract over? And he said, I don't remember. I said, yeah, it's end of January, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And we looked at the contract and it said December 31st. And he was flying back to America the next day, which means I have to take care of the whole apartment.
Okay.
And then I think we immediately start arguing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's funny because, like, we wanted to move back together, but the moment, no, it's happening now, you have to leave the vague. Then suddenly there was this pressure of like, okay, there's no preparation time.
But so you had to move all his things?
I think there were very few things. I think he moved everything, but I had to wake up very early, be there when, do the cleaning and...
Okay, yeah, that's also some work. Yeah.
Right. And again, the principal bothered me that, you know, he should have looked at this in advance and informed me and...
Okay, yeah.
You know. In the next year, things got better. Slowly, we lived back together. Things were fine. And this is spring of 2018. And then my mother's illness, which honestly, this topic became dormant for me. I didn't really think about it so much. She lived normally. She worked normally, et cetera, et cetera. She called me one day. And I remember holding Casey's hand because it was very scary. And she told me her cancer came back or was regrowing again. And that was kind of the end of that period, you know, because suddenly my mom's situation, after many years, became a priority again. And that summer, and I took a lot of time off from a PhD, and, well, Casey, you know, this is something I'll always be grateful to him. He took time from his summer break, and he lived with my mother alone for a month and took care of her while she did chemotherapy. And, I mean, he would leave and I went to America to take care of her, you know, and he developed a very strong relationship with my mom, and he credited my mom with encouraging him with his career and helping him with financial planning and stuff. And I was very grateful for that because I had a very complicated, I love my mom a lot, but there's emotional baggage.
Of course.
And yeah. There's not the same, he does not have the same emotional baggage.
Of course not, yeah.
And I was really grateful for that. Also because I think that connection was stronger than the connection I had to Casey's parents. And during this time, that's, my PhD was going very well, but then it started to derail and I had, like, you know, I felt very unmotivated with my PhD. I couldn't concentrate on my PhD. I also felt like when I was in America, I couldn't concentrate on her. Also, this whole topic of, you know, the relationship and open relationship, that topic just stopped.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is, it continued. We were still in an open relationship. We both did things
mm-hmm.
with other people, but it was just no longer under discussion. And I really, that was also another error because he said, once he made this statement in passing, oh, you know, and we're constantly cheating on each other. And I really should have stopped. Like, how? Because I think in his mind, he never quite accepted. In his mind, there was something.
For him, it wasn't an open relationship after all. It was.
Even if he was sleeping with other men, it was still breaking some rule.
Yeah.
You know, and I really, maybe because I'm kind of passive, I didn't push the topic, I didn't push a debate. Also, everything about my mom. So, in retrospect, yes, there was this, I think, a growing frustration or dissatisfaction. And also for me, I was just, yeah, I was an open relationship. But then the focus was my mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel really guilty about this. But between the PhD and Casey and my life in Switzerland, I'm a scientist. I've worked in cancer research before. I consider myself a rational, logical person. And it was every obvious sign that when the cancer comes back like this, that
there's not much time.
There's not much time. And I never, it's like my mind was immune to this idea. It refused to accept it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is almost like, I was almost kind of annoyed to be in America because my PhD was paused and et cetera. And my mom's personality just started to change a
mm-hmm.
little bit. And it really, and I feel really, really guilty. I feel really guilty about that.
That you couldn't appreciate it as the last time you had together. Or
right.
Something. Yeah.
I mean, I did have beautiful experiences with her. But, you know, I did not have this consciousness of
mm-hmm.
what was happening.
But I think that's happening to many, many, many people, that you, in retrospect, you see that you should have valued this time so much, but when you're in it, there's so much other stuff going on, and, you know, and you're still human, and you're still annoyed, and you're still tired, and you're still thinking about something else.
Right.
That's just how it is. And I think I can totally see that you kind of feel guilty, but I think you really don't have to. I think that's what many, many people experience in this situation.
When we were back in Switzerland for autumn, and even though I knew my mom, I heard something like my mom needed another surgery for something. I very naively thought it was okay to, for me and Casey to book a holiday, a vacation for Christmas break in Sweden. And then I would see my mom in February or something like that. And a few days, 1 week before we went to Sweden, then I got a phone call saying my mom was back in the hospital. So we canceled everything. We flew back basically immediately. And again, it's the same denial. You know, she's a lot weaker. She's having difficulty walking. Her behavior is starting to change. She had brain tumors. But my mom was very, refused to, very optimistic. I mean, she really outlasted every doctor's prediction.
Yeah.
And she had kept bouncing back. So we never, both Casey and I just didn't question that, oh, of course she's fine. She just needs a little bit of time to recover and then it'll be back to normal. Even though, objectively, the facts showed that, you know, she's a lot weaker. She's a lot sicker. So we were even thinking about, okay, let's install these things in the house to make it more accessible for her. Let's set up, you know, helpers, assistants in the house. And I remember being so stressed. She even talked about, let's move to a smaller house. So I need to fly back in the summer to help her move everything to a smaller house. And I was so tired. And I don't think I'm fine admitting to this. I feel better saying it. I remember there was this one moment where I just thought maybe it would be easier. Things would just be easier if she died. I never really forgave myself for thinking that. I mean, I'm our only child, and she doesn't have any full brothers or sisters. She, her parents don't live nearby, and it was Christmas Day, and she really wanted to go to a restaurant to eat, even though she was very weak, but we weren't thinking straight either, and we said, okay, and we help her get to the car, and she falls over.
Oh, no.
And both me and Casey were I was closer to her, so, and I didn't catch her. And she was okay. She actually said, oh, fine, let's go to the restaurant.
Oh, God.
But what happened was, like, at the restaurant that she started to, I think the impact, the fall, it started to.
Oh, no, that sounds so terrible.
And...
Oh, no.
And she went to the hospital, and this was Christmas Day, and she eventually regained consciousness, and she was scared. It was the first time I saw her be scared, and she asked to hold my hand, which is not, that's not her at all. So for her to ask me to hold her hand because she was scared, herself, she realized that something really bad was happening. And even for me, I think it was the idea was gradually, you know, seeping into my head. And she started to decline more and more. She started to lose the ability to write, to read. And especially when the pain became so bad, I disapproved. Let's give very powerful painkillers, which can make your brain even more slow. And you know, family friends would say, no, you should take this time to talk to her. And I couldn't say. I could only make small talk. Of course, I've had many deep discussions with my mom in the past, but in this moment, these last chances to have long conversations with her, my brain blanked. Meanwhile, Casey could. He giving him life advice and everything. And
of course, but it wasn't his mom.
Exactly.
It's a totally different situation.
Yeah. And for Casey, he eventually had to fly back for work. He took time off, but he had to fly back to work. And, you know, right before he left, we said goodbye as a couple to her. And, you know, she was actually, you know, in the very beginning, she was very suspicious of him.
Yeah.
She didn't think he was good enough for me, blah, 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 blah. And really, over time, he really gained her respect by having a good career and working very hard.
Speaking Vietnamese.
Exactly. It was very sad, but we sang a duet in Vietnamese for her, of which we have a video, and I can't watch the video because in its entirety, I would break down emotionally. And that was Casey's goodbye, and our goodbye as a couple to her. And he flew back. At this point, my mom was at home for hospice care.
Mm-hmm.
And by this point, yes, people were telling us that I already knew that time was limited. And she lived another 6 weeks
mm-hmm.
after Casey left.
And you've been there for this whole 6 weeks.
Yes, so, and this was one of the most surreal, nightmarish periods of my life. Because, I mean, I organized 24-hour aids, which, you know, but the company, they had different staff coming in.
Yeah.
And, you know, if it's a completely new person coming at 6 a.m., who doesn't know, I need to explain everything to them. I think I averaged easily only 3-4 hours of sleep a day for this whole period. Throughout the day, no regular sleep. I had some aides who would, like, wake me up in the middle of sleep to say, and of course my instinct is, oh my God, she died. And then it's like, oh, no, I don't understand what she's saying. Can you translate? Because she was starting to forget English.
Yeah.
And...
Oh, God.
And it was this continual... Thank God I kept the diary. I still had these beautiful moments with her and have some conversations with her. And there was these moments when she got a lot better and I was able to have longer conversations. And eventually I got her mom to fly from Vietnam to spend time with her. And
That's good.
Yeah.
That's really good that this happened.
And
it's really good of you that you've been there for this long time after all.
Right. But still all this guilt I had from before. I felt like, yeah, I know even if I had a time machine, I go back and I do everything right, I'm sure I will have other things I would regret. You know, it's never...
Of course, but you're also a son, and a son is has his own life and is sometimes annoyed of his mother and all these things. It's just life. You cannot be this perfect person for her.
My mom always complained that she was thirsty and she was losing her ability to swallow. And I kept asking, can we put IV fluids? And they said, no, because the fluids will make the tumors will... And at one point, I overrode and I sent her to the hospital. And I didn't really explain that, oh, make the IV go slowly. And they just put as much fluid in her as possible.
Okay.
And I was with her, and then I saw when she lost her ability to speak. And then she lasted 3 more days, and she could open her eyes, but she couldn't move, and I think it caused paralysis. And that's also something I have a really hard time forgiving myself for. I know I didn't want to see her suffer, because I know she was dehydrated. I know...
So she was dehydrated, and you wanted her to have some more water?
Right.
So brought her to the hospital despite...
The advice of one of the nurses.
And then when she was at the hospital, you should have said,
slowly. And instead they
flooded. Yeah.
And after she lost her ability to speak and move, I mean, she could only move her eyes.
Hmm.
She tried to speak, but nothing would come out of her mouth. And eventually we decided that, you know, it's time. We know what's going to happen. And we took her home, and she died the same night that we took her home. And my grandmother was there. She was sleeping. I tell my grandmother that her only child died, which is something I never want to ever do again to anyone. I fought with my grandmother because she's a very strong personality and had her own strong ideas about what to do, and very religious, lots of superstitious beliefs.
For the funeral.
Yeah.
That's just too much.
And
Ben, that's just too much for one person, what you're telling me right now.
And I know this is completely deviating from the, you know, the theme, but she had very specific rules because she was very traditional about what needs to happen. Like, the body needs to be there for 12 hours. We need to dress her in, like, religious clothing. We need to do this, we need to do that. And then she asked the nursing aide to put makeup on her.
Oh, no. Come on.
And I first said, sure, fine. And I came back after 15 minutes. And she looked like a clown. I mean, literally, imagine this. Like, pure white foundation.
Oh, goodness.
Bright blue eyeshadow. Hot pink lipstick. And, like, black, the blackest, like...
Eyebrows.
The eyeliner. Yeah,
Oh, no.
And I had this huge argument. And this poor nursing aide, I had to tell her. First, this woman is telling her in broken English, and then I'm telling her to remove it.
Oh, no.
And then we were arguing, and then she's like, no, we have to get a photo for the funeral. So a few hours after she died, I had no sleep. We had to go through at least 1,000 photos of her to find what photo to use, you know.
Oh, this is a nightmare. This is a nightmare. Oh, no.
Fortunately, my mom passed away at 6:30 in the morning Zurich time, and Casey was waking up, and the flight directly to Washington is at noon. So I caught him soon after, and he actually got on the first. So he actually, my mom passed away at midnight,
mm-hmm.
my time, and then he was in my hometown the next afternoon.
Wow.
So it was very, you know.
That's really good.
Yeah, and to be perfectly honest, with all the emotional baggage, I don't know how I would have emotionally survived this period, this whole thing without him. And it was almost like there was so much, I knew life was so emotionally stuck that there was actually this relief that at least there's Casey.
Of course.
That he could kind of bridge in a way or something.
And you're just not alone, and it's not all
yes,
on you.
Yes, and she also trusted him at the end and kind of felt safe that I was left with him, and she trusted him that
we, and he also knew her, and so
exactly.
On. Yeah.
Anyway, we rapidly organized a funeral. We had a traditional Buddhist ceremony that we, at the very end, I accompanied my mom's body down to the basement of the funeral home, and Casey held my hand while I pushed the button to turn on the crematorium. I never cried so much in my life. I wouldn't have had it any other way. I mean, my grandmother was there, my grandfather was there, Casey was there. I had some really close friends there as well. But you know, the thing is, I mean, you probably know this. I mean, there's so much adrenaline during this whole period. So the actual grief is after.
Of course, yeah.
And then really afterwards, it was just collapse. I mean, really. Just crying, screaming in the car. I was losing my temper with Casey. And I could tell that Casey had used an immense amount of power, emotional strength to support me, but he was kind of running out. I mean, no one has infinite energy.
Of course not.
And he flew back. Anyway, eventually we both went back to Zurich. And, you know, that was actually the worst part of the depression, because then it's you're back in Switzerland and life is normal and everyone's just doing normal things. And you're the, you know, compared to 2 months of being surrounded by nurses and family friends and family visiting my mom, and the whole topic is my mom's death. And then suddenly just here, restart your PhD, friends want to have drinks with you, check, you know.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
It doesn't, you know.
For them, not much has changed. Yeah.
And I became suicidal. Casey had basically, he found in the search history that I was Googling suicide methods, and he intervened. And he had me go to the psychiatric hospital, and eventually I started going to see a psychologist, who I still see 2 years to this date. And
really good.
Yeah, and it's helped a lot. And in that way, I have, he's really helped me a lot with that, the psychologist. Anyway.
But it's still so much.
Yeah.
It's still so much that you just had to go through.
Right. And I forgot to say, to the relationship, around this time, we kind of said, let's be monogamous. This is crazy. Let's just,
yeah,
you know. And I agree. Yeah, let's not.
Always Casey who said, let's be monogamous. Oh.
Yes.
Yes.
Correct. Anyway, this next year, this is 2019, I had to fly back to America. I was the only person with the responsibility. I had to organize the house, clean it, do this, do that, blah, 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 blah. And at one point, Casey and I met in Madrid. I flew back from America to Madrid. He met me in Madrid. We tried to have a nice holiday.
Of course.
And just to clean our minds. And it was actually really nice. But then one day, I'm in bed with him. He takes out his phone. He opens Grindr. And of course, it's like, didn't we just... And he just says, oh, yeah, I'm just walking around. Doesn't mean anything. But
okay, yeah.
You know, I mean, come on. Like,
That's kind of a situation, yeah.
At least talk to me. You can't just dismiss it. I mean, again, this inequality of power. I feel like I could not do that to him. And maybe this dynamic is just reinforced because usually I don't react very strongly. So maybe it kind of enables him to do these things more, and he reacts very strongly to me when I do something that he feels wrong. So that makes me more and more passive and scared. And that actually was always something he was very critical, was that I was always so passive and did not stand up for myself. Anyway, I actually forget exactly what happened, but it's the exact sequence. But at some point, maybe there was a discussion. I don't remember if there was a discussion or not, but at some point, the relationship kind of just de facto opened up again, because I think this happened and everything. And anyway, I was a wreck, maybe not in the best position to be having like discussions. And that was not the right way to move forward. I took a few months off to go to America in the summer to clear out the house, finally. And Casey had sort of break. He was supposed to help me. Unfortunately, Casey's mom had her own situation, and he needed to help her move from New Orleans to Seattle. And my hometown is near Washington, D.C. So he was unable to really help me with this. And I'm not angry at him for that. Another really good friend of mine, he went down from Canada and he helped me. But during the summer, which I think Casey did cover, like, one part, I picked up, Casey flew to Montreal, which is one of my favorite cities in the world, and I showed him Montreal, we drove around Quebec, and then we met a friend in Vermont, and I saw, and then Casey went on his own road trip with a German friend, and I went on a road trip with my Canadian friend who helped move, and we were just driving around, and we all met in New Orleans, and my friend decided to help Casey's mom as well, and it was just this.
Sounds nice.
It was chaotic, but very fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it was very, we had arguments, but it was, I mean, it was still it was the appropriate way to spend the summer. We drove 9,000 kilometers that summer.
Wow.
In a big U, letter U, from Quebec down the East Coast to New Orleans, up through the West to the Rockies, up to Seattle.
Yeah, it's a shame that people can't see you right now when you're drawing that U.
But again, I expected Casey would, you know, had done a lot of work, had helped his mom a lot. But it turned out he did not do so much. And actually, my friend, my Canadian friend, had to do a lot of it. We did pay him, by the way. It's not like he was just our servants. And, you know, he just kind of stayed in the Airbnb for like 1 or 2 weeks, just binge watching Breaking Bad, and just gained a lot of weight, just eating a lot of pizza. Like, you know, and okay, I understand, but I thought you were supposed to help me. But okay, whatever. And he also made this past very casual comments like, oh yeah, and I slept with this guy, whatever. And then I said, oh, okay, sure, whatever. Anyway, there was one point when I was in New Orleans and I was alone. I did meet another guy. And then later on the road trip, I mentioned it in passing. And Casey got very angry because he said it was cheating. And I said, wait, didn't you sleep with someone in New Orleans? He says, no, but you weren't in New Orleans with me. You slept with someone else when we were in the same city at the same time. And that was never a rule. We never discussed, like...
Okay.
So I was just like, are you just creating this rule out of nothing and then attacking me? And so we had a big fight, but then we reconciled and we went to this opera premiere in New Mexico. We drove all around. I had multiple emotional breakdowns, cried a lot. We fought, we reconciled, we went to a rodeo, you know.
Yeah.
So meanwhile, my Canadian friend took my mom's car, drove back to my hometown near Washington, D.C. to help my mom's friend's husband's mom move. So it was just like this, we were all, like all three of us were just like driving. It was really, really...
But at this time, when you had a lot of fights and a lot of feelings like this is somehow not fair, we are always arguing, we're always hurting each other. Was it ever that you thought maybe we should split up? Maybe this is not working?
No.
Why not?
At least not me. Honestly, and this is something that really stressed Casey, because by this point, everything that happened, Casey was almost like this only last source of sanity for me. It was the only thing that made sense, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, everything felt really empty. I was thinking about suicide, and Casey was the one who was with her mom when she died, and she almost kind of left me to him.
I can see that, yeah.
So there was, even though it was really painful, there was at least this.
Yeah.
So it was never, you know...
But you must have been feeling that this is not a healthy relationship. This is not like...
Correct, yeah. But I think it's a little bit of also denial.
Okay.
Also, it's in retrospect, if I look at my diary, yes, when you have distance, it's like very obvious that things are unhealthy. But it's like my mom, like I didn't realize what the real situation
was.
And it was like this, when you're in it every day, it's just the reality of the relationship
of course,
and you don't question it.
Yeah.
Anyway, at the end, I was super exhausted. We went back to Washington near my hometown and Casey had to fly back early for school. And he was really worried because I was starting to feel very depressed again because now the house was becoming empty and I had to give the key to the real estate agent.
Mm-hmm.
I managed to do it somehow. I gave the key back to the real estate agent. I flew back to Switzerland and, you know, I felt so much better. When you give that key...
It's gone. You did it.
I did it.
Yeah.
Because this was, also like such a terrifying thought of going through a house that she was in for about 20 years. And,
of course, yeah.
And clearing everything. And then now this whole weight is on my shoulders. There's this... woman, real estate agent who will take care of everything and I can blah, blah, blah.
And you can kind of go back to your life.
Yes.
Somehow.
And
yeah.
I came back and I felt so much lighter.
That's good. And you also can be proud for what you did there, I think.
Right, although I have to admit, definitely for my mom's death, I couldn't have done it with Casey. And for the house, I really couldn't have done it without my friend in Canada. And anyway... I came back, and I think one problem was, I think in these very stressful situations, because Casey had a lot to deal with, a lot of his own problems with his mom, his family, blah, blah, blah. I think for him, his personality is that he needs to kind of recover by returning to routine, and let's just do things the right way. And then also he's a teacher, so this job already has a lot of routine, and...
Of
know,
course,
and
yeah.
Just,
and you are more free. You have this PhD program, but you
yes,
do it the
I,
way it fits you.
Exactly. And I know he's always frustrated that I seem to work not as hard as he did, or I had much more irregular hours.
But maybe we could go a bit forward for our listeners. So you've been back here.
Yes.
And you feel lighter. You feel better. And that's 2019.
End of 2019.
End of 2019.
And basically what happened was I had these two friends who invited me to a party with them in Berlin. And I decided to go.
Yeah.
Last minute. 1 week after I came back, because I felt happy, whatever.
Yeah, and you're still young, and you're still like,
right.
You need some relief and so on.
And Casey was very angry. Again, like, why shouldn't you just be going back to work and make routine? Why are you just, to him, like, why am I looking for chaos, you know? I went to Berlin, and then Casey wrote me, you need to move out of the apartment, and he blocked me. Fortunately, one of the friends, he lives in Zurich, and I lived with him for a while, and eventually I ended up in the WG I live in now.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this repetition of, like, him being very angry and finding reasons, and then eventually we did do couples counseling, which helped a lot. An amazing couples counselor, but eventually in 2020, and we still live separately, but now because of couples counseling, we were starting to repair the relationship. We spent more time together. We were talking about buying a flat.
Oh, wow.
Even when, you know, and moving in and all these things. And, you know, because now he was about to get a Zellbewilligung to permanently stay in Switzerland. And we were very excited and everything. And, of course, this is my image. When I read in the diary, I could tell there were more problems, but it was better.
Yeah.
And around this time, in the spring of last year, 2020, his personality started to change. I think it was a combination of stress from work, anticipation of the Zellbewilligung, maybe just the isolation of working from home because of the pandemic.
Lockdown.
And he started to be very excited about writing. And he is a beautifully creative person, writes beautifully, very talented. And he said, I want to write a novel.
Mm-hmm.
I said, of course, I support you. Yeah, of course. He started to spend more and more money on weird things. He started, I mean, you know Konmari, that Japanese woman who says...
Ah, yeah. Marie Kondo.
Sorry.
Yeah, but Konmari is also...
Yeah, the Konmari method, yes. He was always inspired by that because we have a small apartment with too much stuff.
Of course, that makes a lot of sense.
And there is this official consultant in Zurich, and he started using her as a life coach as well.
Oh, nice.
But
that's pricey.
Oh, but she's not a life... I mean, her website doesn't say anything about being a life coach. She just charges you, like, you know... She even has a special plan where you pay her 200 francs and she will help you organize the photos on your phone. Like...
Nice. That's a nice business model. I like that.
And at some point, he just kept using her over and over. And then he was, like, using her, calling her to help him reorganize socks for, like, the fifth or sixth time. And he
nice.
Was spend. But then he got to the point when I realized he was spending 1,300 francs a month on her. I live in my big eight. I didn't question it so much. But I realized he was spending more and more. He was getting to debt. I lent him some money. Our finances were combined. I trust him. Around the time he got his C permit... He had a couch surfer live with him for free, but he was like, he lent the couch surfer 2,000 euros because he needed help, blah, blah, blah. And then I realized that, okay, no, this is a real problem. Around this time, I know in retrospect this sounds crazy, but I had been planning a trip to travel that summer.
The two of you again.
Half of it was with me and half of it was it would be for me to travel alone.
Okay.
And of course... He was becoming more and more unstable, and I went to the psychiatrist with him, and we agreed that okay, I would keep his credit card so he doesn't spend, and then he would go to the clinic. And Casey gave me permission to say yes, you can go, enjoy yourself. I'm fine. I'm in the clinic. I'm safe. And I went on this trip alone, just to kind of escape because I was just so much stress. I was becoming very exhausted by this point, you know. And had spent so much money. It's a long story, but he basically had a miss. So Casey had a is an open. I you know, by this point it was still an open relationship. He had this misinterpretation and thought I had like another boyfriend, which I don't. So and then his mindset is very different now. And so he went from being before I flew from Switzerland, I saw him in the clinic, loving, kissing me, showing me off to the other patients that this is my husband. He's an amazing person. And I came back from my trip to Italy, and I met him, and he just completely changed. He did not want to talk to me. I was really confused. I was like, aren't we supposed to go to the psychiatrist? No, you cannot see. I don't want you to see a psychiatrist. I don't feel safe. And then he was insisting that I go to the clinic because I needed psychiatric help. And I went to the clinic.
Oh, wow.
And he's like trying to tell the psychiatrist in front of me about like that I'm cheating on him and stuff. And I was like, wait, this is about me. And the psychiatrist had to tell Casey to please wait outside. And anyway, I said, look, I don't think I need to go to a clinic. I'm just very stressed. Maybe let me see how I feel. I'm not sure. And then Casey's afterwards, I meet Casey outside and he's like, you know what? I've been meaning to tell you, you know, I was hoping you would be in the clinic so that you'll be in a safe place. But I need to tell you, I know this will cause a psychological breakdown, but I need to tell you that I need to leave you for 1 year, 2 years. I don't know. I can't promise anything. And if it means that you can't handle it and you, you know, do something and kill yourself, then I would have to accept it. And I completely collapsed. He then went to the mountains, which the couch surfer, and spent he used one of the credit cards he had and spent 9,000 francs at a luxury hotel.
Yeah, he told me about that.
He then, you know, I was in a meltdown. I eventually went to the clinic and everything, and Casey would say loving things to me, and then the next day say that, you know, complains that I'm controlling him. And then this is back and forth. And eventually I just...
But at this point, didn't you think maybe we should just stop?
No, because, I mean, he has a point in this point, which is my entire psychological sense of meaning was built on this. It was like the last thing that made sense.
Yeah.
If you take Casey away, there's no one else I interact with on a daily basis that knows my life before Switzerland, that has met my mom. He's the only person. So if you take him out, then I'm just floating in a void. I don't have siblings. I don't have parents, basically. I'm not close to my grandparents, you know. So it really was this sudden, I mean, and I became, you know, suicidal again. And I had to go to the clinic, which helped a lot. And eventually, the situation was going to lead somewhere bad. I discovered he borrowed 40,000 francs from the bank.
Mm-hmm.
At a very bad interest rate.
Oh no.
And I told his family, because he had a history I was afraid it would lead to something very bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I told his family, and I also said, please, if he tries to use your address or tries to use you to borrow money or blah, 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 please don't. And I also told two of his friends, and he got extremely mad because he, in his mind, I'm not letting go. Why am I controlling him? And he called me and he said, I never want to speak to you again. Thank God by this point, I was already on antidepressants. I remember feeling numb, but that was in September and there was months of no contact.
And I have seen the two of you in January at your divorce.
Right. He filed for divorce unilaterally. I can't really stop him. And so I had no choice. And I also had to protect him. On the last phone call, when he said, I never want to speak to you again, he said, you need to get a lawyer. He was threatening the inheritance for my mom, and we're married, and I was really scared. And he even made weird comments, like he was about stealing my mom's money and things. So I was really overwhelmed. And so my lawyer said, just divorce. It's safe.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing for you.
But then during the divorce, it was surreal. He, you know, he winked at me. He was... acted normal around me after months of no contact. And then, you know, after the court is over, he says, oh, how are you doing? After months of just no contact, just like, I'm never talking to you again, whatever. And then he invited me over for coffee and wanted to do things with me. It was the anniversary of my mom's death, which for the Vietnamese, we have special things to do. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to do those things with me, which helped a lot. And eventually I confronted him about the podcast, because I found out, and he got very angry and cut off all contact since that was about 1 month ago.
Okay, so now you're not in contact anymore.
No.
And what would you like to happen now?
I don't know. Logically, I know that enough damage has been caused. I know that there's lots of toxic things, and I should move on. I am still not over him. The reasons I have, the meaning he has in my life, I was with him for about 10 years.
Of course.
He was with me for 10 years that my life changed the most. I can't just erase that.
No, you can't. And do you see there is a way of you and Casey maybe being some sort of friends, some sort of family, but maybe not a couple?
Yes, but I mean, honestly, I think he just needs to solve his own problems first.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid that if I try to intervene too much, it just makes things worse.
That could be it. But still, I think I have been in a totally different relationship from yours, but still I have been in one that has not been functioning for quite a long time. And I had a lot of toxic things going on and things that were repeating itself in a different form, but it was kind of a recreation of some hurt years ago and so on. And I think of the story you told me, now there's lots of these things going on, lots of unhealthy things, lot of the same hurt that is somehow and somehow right. mirrored and somehow, and I think it's really difficult after such a long time to get out of these things, to
right.
see each other kind of new and to stop this behavior, because I think there are so many triggers, so many things. If Casey just says one word, it already opens up a whole box for you. Ooh. I can imagine all these patterns, and I think that's maybe, yeah.
Right, but I mean, at the very least, you know, when I was in the mental clinic, he was actually sending me links on Homegate Pungseha of flats we should buy together. And then the next day, 1 month later, I don't want to talk to you ever again. Even if it's unhealthy, he knew how important the marriage was to me, as it is important
to
him.
I think it was also important.
Of course.
Him, yeah.
But at least I'm owed, I feel, a discussion, you know, and he never gave me that discussion.
Maybe he's not ready for that yet.
Right, but then...
And I think it will come eventually. I think I really hope that the two of you will come to this point where you can just
right,
talk.
But, I mean, you have to understand that there's something very hurtful, then, and I don't get that, but then I find out indirectly through the podcast that he's basically saying everything he couldn't say to me, his husband, at the time. I understand the internal logic
mm-hmm.
that, you know, was always had communication difficulties sometimes. But that doesn't take away what I feel like is my basic right out of a 8-year marriage.
Mm-hmm. I think I cannot speak for him, of course, but I think he feels different because I think he feels like he has talked a lot and he has been communicating. And I think it's always so, yeah, so difficult sometimes to just understand each other. But I think for him, it's not the two of you have not talked about these things. I think he does not feel that way.
Again, it's these unspoken things, or he thinks he's talking the same way about all these times that I thought he was using a double standard.
Yeah, yeah. I can see that. I can totally see that. And I have, in my previous relationship, which lasted 14 years, I've been much more in your position than in his, because I was the one that was always trying to talk, the one that was trying to somehow do an open relationship, and I can totally see your side of the story. But I think I also can see the side of my boyfriend at the time now, because for him, this communication was so painful, and I said what I feel and I said what I'm thinking about this. It was a 2-minute conversation. It's not that we really talked about it, but for him it was like I talked and it didn't help. So I think it's just the communication styles, it somehow does not match. And you cannot make this go away.
Of course.
Yeah.
But, I mean, in the last conversation we had about the podcast, I said, can you at least just apologize for not talking to me about the podcast in advance? For asking something?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, fine, then apologize for telling my family about the loan. And to me, this was just like, how is this equal? And he says, no, I won't apologize. I was really scared you were going to maybe kill yourself or something, and you did something crazy, and I didn't want you to destroy your life by going into deeper, deeper debt. So, of course, I was wanted to tell your family what was happening. And to him, this was an equal violation. So if I don't apologize by that, he doesn't apologize for the podcast. And then I said, no, I want to apologize. And he hung up the phone.
But still, he was fine with you telling your side of the story.
Right.
Not that he said, no, I wouldn't have done it. Because I think, for me, it's very important for my podcast guests to feel safe and to feel good about their experience. And if he did not have wanted you to tell your side of the story, I think I wouldn't have done it. Because at first he has been my breakup guest, so I'm protecting him. But now that he said it's fine, and he still talks really nicely about you. That's all I can
say.
Right,
and I know that. And I know that on some deep level he still loves me and I still love him on some level.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that I didn't sound like I was being unfair or mean to him. I still love him, and there were so many beautiful things from that relationship and that marriage.
Mm-hmm.
He's a beautiful person, and I, you know, it's hard for me to figure out what to do with my life without him or without a proper resolution discussion, which in my interpretation never happened. I mean, I'm finishing my PhD in around September, October. I sometimes wonder, maybe I should just leave Switzerland. I
go to Sweden?
Or a new country, I don't know. Because otherwise I'm just constantly stuck in these thoughts, and Zurich is a very small city.
Yeah, and I think you need to go on somehow. Is there anything you would like to say to Casey?
He knows, so I don't have to say it. I just hope he's okay. And I know this may sound weak, but I do miss him.
Is there anything that you like about your new life without him? Is there anything like you think it's less stressful, I can concentrate on the studies, or...
Well, actually, my studies have gone a lot better, but I think that's also because the things with my mom are resolved.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a combination. Yes, there are positive things. The freedom is nice. Also, being able to ask myself properly, and this is something I'm very bad at, what do I want? Casey was always angry because he would always ask very aggressively, what do you want? And I couldn't answer that.
Yeah.
Because for my personality, it's like, what I want depends on what you want. It depends on the thing. You can't just isolate the question. And I think, and now I'm kind of forced to ask this directly. And now I don't have any connection. I don't have anything tying me down. My PhD is almost done.
So what do you want?
I don't know. Do something, I don't know. I don't know if I want to stay in my career, do something different. If I want to stay in Switzerland, if I want to go someplace completely different. What other country? I don't know.
But I think you'll find it.
Eventually.
I'm pretty optimistic that you'll find it.
Yeah.
Because I think you have a lot going on.
Yeah.
I think you still have this sense about yourself that you know that you are capable of many things and that you can build a beautiful life.
Right. But I mean, that's the thing too, is this sense of myself. There's this instinct of like, no, if I just gave more of myself to Casey, if I gave more to my mom, everything would be better. But I know it's not how
it works. It's not like this, no.
And if anything, in some ways, at least in the marriage, it made it worse.
Thank you for your honesty. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me on the show, my podcast.
And thank you all for listening. Thank you for listening to my English.
You did great.
It's a lot. It's a lot that you've been going through.
Yeah.
And I think anyone would have a hard time finding their way through it.
Anyway, thank you.
Bye, Ben. This name has been changed, for the record.